skylark.
He sits near the window and looks at the sky. It's red and green and shivers like the dawn. It whispers to him. It slip out the door, smash the glass, and fall into the breeze. He won't. Instead, his wings drape like swan arms over the back of his chair. But there is no one to sew him a metal shirt into normal. Whatever that is, he has always lacked the tool and chart to track it. Perhaps young Master Werner would like to explain the significance of Sir Mordred's death via Arthur's spear, rather than the quick smote of his blade. Master McCoy swings upside down and topsy-turvy by one foot from a ceiling rafter, Mortarthur splayed in one vast, gnarled oak hand. What? Says Angel. His wings flutter and clutch close. Scotius Summersley smirks beneath his ruby band. Angel can feel the flush rise up his tunic into his cheeks, always fair to rise to apple hue. Master Grey, green eyes, slant in serious smiles, and Angel's flush fair redoubles. A place to be himself and no more to hide what he is. Whatever that is. He stutters, I don't see why we're studying this. Angel forces his wings down, and still, down he falls. Not like it's helpless escape when the good folk come to run the witch breed from their hills. Ha! And who cleft your angel's foot and set the mermaid singing, says Robert Truffus, lounging with feet propped on a low stool. McCoy drops to the floor with a boom and shakes the dust most dancing. We study because it is indeed a marvelous bondage to become servants to one tongue for learning's sake, the most of our time with lost of most time. McCoy paces the tiny room crowded with its sputtering of supposed sons of gentlefolk. He looms and leans over Angel and says, whereas we have the same very treasure in our own tongue, with a gain of more time, our own bearing joyful title of our liberty and freedom. I love Rome, but London better. McCoy skips up a wall and leaps over John Grey. I favor Italy, but England more. I honor the Latin, but worship the English. McCoy holds his book up close to his nose and inhales. The pages flutter. We learn because, as Castiglione would teach us in his book of the courtier, that the greatest of all skills is spretitura, or as we may say in our poor mongrel mother beloved tongue that is English, nonchalance, which we gain not by seeming to be knowledgeable, but by being so, and thus are free to escape not with just bodies, but with minds. Omnia multur, molantur, nos emuramatur en illis. All things change, and we change with them, but only if we grant ourselves the tools to do so. Sorry, yes, said Angel. McCoy grins and turns. Now then, since Master Summersley would smile at the question, perhaps he would care to lessen us in the answer. McCoy places the book before the scowling youth and points to a printed line on a page with a rough finger. Now it is Angel's turn to smile. For past the initial salvation from the Inquisitor's fire, more Master Javier's doing the Scotius's, the scurly boy has done more and more to endear himself with his growls every time Angel chances to smile at Master Grey. Angel smiles at Master Grey, who does not speak much, but can float a bit. John Grey glances quickly at Scotius and Angel and says, I think that the spear is described as thirsty for slaughter. It gets left on the battlefield, but the sword of Excalibur returns to the Lady of the Lake. The spear is just thirsty. Well, the Excalibur is quenched. It is the weapon of Rex Quondam, Rex Futurus, the once and future king. Arthur dies, but he's not going to stay dead. He may return at any time to win the Holy Cross, the symbol of rebirth. Robert Truffus laughs and says, always the peacemaker, Jean. What next? Will you give them both the kiss of peace? Jean Green blushes and ducks his narrow face down. His red hair falls forward in streaks. Scotius somehow glares at Robert from beneath his ruby shades. However, Angel's not sure how Scrooge manages this without eyes to be seen, but he does. Robert grins and blows a puff of cool breath to hang and dissolve in the air. Master Trefus, have you a better explanation, says McCoy? Robert sketches a cross in the air with his finger. It glistens a moment before fading. Oh, the sword is the cross, and the spear is the spear, and the grail is the cup of milk in which nature washed her hands to make snow, and Mordred is just a bit of a prat. Robert puts his hands behind his head and says, now for stories of adventure and battles, I prefer the romance of silence. Silentia, dressed as Silentius. Don't you agree, Jean? Leave the lad alone, boy, says McCoy. You're too quick to jest. McCoy jumps back to the ceiling to swing up again, upside down and topsy-turvy. Master Grey, if you would do us the honor of reading aloud the next part of the deaths of Lancelot and Guinevere. Master Grey nods quickly and begins to read. John Grey's soft boy's voice stumbles with the words in a rush of stops and starts. Angel's mind wanders from Amesbury Abbey, where the lovers do not quite meet again before they die, and for all the weeping and dolor, they stay dead. Angel glances out the window at the widening sky. There are songbirds flying swift in formation bound up from the green fields towards the low trees in the distance. They haven't quite the same allure as companions as they once did. Angel smiles at Master Grey, who does not speak much, and therefore stumbles over words, but can float a bit. Perhaps tomorrow morning they will float silently together in the warm-up draught and leave secrets behind. Angel does not look out the window again. His eye, his gaze, is on red hair and green eyes, like a blushing dawn. And much closer to hand.